You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
It's good to hear that Bill Brooks is back on the radio. Good afternoon. We got the band back together today. Sammy, welcome back.
The drummer is back in his chair.
How was Nashville?
Oh my gosh. Nashville is electric, overwhelming, incredibly expensive, and absolutely amazing
quick
every
in,
step of the way.
Quick out.
We spent 3 nights on the strip, and I had to take out a mortgage.
Could you have done 2 nights? Because I have always said it had been years since I'd been to Nashville, and we took a girls trip there, 5 years ago? Mm-hmm. It is very much a 2 day in, 2 day out. It's like Vegas, in and out.
Well, so the first night we had driven all day to get into Nashville, and so we went out, we were super tired. And so then the second night was kind of the all-out night, and that was Saturday night. And so it was absolutely insane the amount of people that were there. We were just constantly pushing our way through people to get anywhere.
Yep.
And then Sunday night was the best. We went down like mid-afternoon and stayed until about 10 o'clock. And that was the best experience because it was like a third the amount of people.
10 o'clock?
Were you able to get off the beaten path at all, or did you just stay in the main downtown insanity district of bars?
We stayed on Broadway the first 2 nights, and then on Sunday we started the day with a 2.5 hour tour of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, or the Country Music Hall of Fame, and that was awesome. I could have stayed in there for 5 hours.
I don't know how I didn't know you were going. I would have told you hit the Johnny Cash Museum. That was my favorite museum.
We saw it. We did not end up going. We had already kind of, blown the budget by the time that it was time to consider going through that thing. So we skipped it, but the Country Music Hall of Fame was enough.
Some of the most interesting people I met in Nashville were the Uber drivers who will tell you that everyone now in the last 5 years is flocking to Nashville, and everyone loves that town except ... the people who live in Nashville. Overnight, Scott, it went from, all right, like the birth of country music, and, you know, there were some quaint little bars and shops. It turned into this just bachelorette party central
America. I have no interest.
You would not like it. Now, the live music is incredible.
But is it all country music?
No. It is rock. You name it, but it's stacked bars. So picture like Westport if everything was stacked 5 stories high.
Okay.
And every single bar on every single story had live music.
That is a fact. And it was awesome. All of it was amazing. We were actually annoyed by the little amount of country music that was being played.
Yeah, it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming. It is overwhelming.
Huh. Okay, I will check Nashville off the list. I have no interest.
It is funny. They've got rules on the strip on Broadway where there's 2 songs that they will not play unless you give them $100.
Let me guess. Friends in Low Places.
No.
Sweet Home Alabama.
No. One of them involves a fiddle. They say that every time
Devil went down to Georgia.
Yep, that one costs you $100. And then there's another song that we actually watched them raise multiple hundreds of dollars to get these songs played. It works. They get the tip money every single time.
What's the other song?
Freebird.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, of course.
Freebird!
So somebody yelled the word Freebird, and they go, oh, no, I heard the F word. That F word is going to cost you $100.
Is that freedom rock, dude?
It was electric.
Good. Well, I'm glad you had a good time. I wouldn't say don't go to Nashville. You just need to understand that it's not what it was 20 years ago and brace yourself for the reality of what it's become.
So it sounds like going to Vegas or New York.
Exactly.
Like in and out.
Yeah. If Vegas had a love child with maybe Memphis and Miami. I mean, it's just wall-to-wall drunken loud music insanity.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
And the traffic is terrible.
Terrible. That's what the Uber drivers were saying. Traffic did not used to be like this. And so when everyone lists Kansas City as like the number one place to go live, I always say, stop saying that.
Right.
Oh, there were about 15 times that I thought our Uber was going to get in a wreck, and they never did. Also, none of the Uber drivers live in Nashville.
The place wasn't
where they live.
They come in for the money on the weekends.
They drive. One of our Uber drivers drives 2 hours a day, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and makes enough money to support himself wherever he lived 2 hours away.
Isn't that crazy?
Really?
The city wasn't planned for being a modern entertainment city.
Correct.
Huh. And now, is Nashville where the Titans play, or do they play in Memphis?
They play in Nissan Stadium, which is right across the pedestrian bridge across the Cumberland River from the Broadway Strip.
Okay.
It's all right there. So Sunday was a little bit hectic because they had the Titans game, and then everybody came from the stadium across the pedestrian bridge into downtown.
Okay.
It's fun for a little vacation.
Little. Emphasis on little.
You guys are not selling me on Nashville at all.
Bring your $100 bills. You're going to need them.
My word.
My wallet's like, help me.
No, I'm good. Did you see the pandas have arrived in the United States?
Yes. Are they pandas or are they bears painted to look like pandas?
You mean dogs painted to look
right.
like. No, these are real giant pandas.
Okay.
They arrived in the National Zoo in D.C. today, less than a year after the nation's capital said goodbye to another pair of pandas that were on loan from China. Why don't you just let us keep the ones that you gave us the first time? That doesn't make sense.
Well, they don't belong to us.
The new pandas, Bao Li and Qing Bao, departed China on Monday, made a stop in Anchorage, Alaska. From there, they went to Washington's Dulles International Airport, landed at 9:53 Eastern Time today. Two FedEx trucks transported the pandas to the zoo.
Good.
Okay.
Speaking of travel, what would you do? Because this has gone viral. An airplane passenger in the middle seat, automatically I'm annoyed, is fuming over what a woman with the window seat did and how she reacted. Okay? A flight passenger endured an awkward encounter when a fellow flyer who seemed unimpressed when he asked her to move her bag from the footwell of his seat. This has gone viral. Ray Child, 29-year-old lawyer, was flying from his hometown of Chicago to St. Louis for a conference. When he gets to his seat, he sees the girl in the window seat, but she has placed her gigantic backpack under his middle seat.
Like underneath the seat in front of him.
And he tries to be nice and jokes, "Sorry, I didn't leave my legs at home. Would you mind moving your bag?" She's got ear pods in, shrugs her shoulders, gives him an eye roll, and refuses to move the bag.
What was under her seat?
Either other luggage or nothing.
Probably her feet.
That's when your bag goes into the aisle.
He shared the photo he took in a Reddit post, which has since received, I think, more than 1,000 upvotes now and thousands of responses. He says, "I was eye-rolled when I politely asked if the window seat passenger could please move her backpack. He briefly sat in that middle seat and then ended up moving into the aisle, which happened to be open. So it worked out. She would not remove the bag from his seat."
Why don't you just call the flight attendant over and tell her or him, "We have an issue. This lady's bag is underneath the seat where I am paying and sitting."
Not to be a complete jerk, but why not grab the bag and move it into her space and put your feet in your space?
Well, one Redditor suggested my dirty blank shoes would be all over that bag, hoping something was breakable inside.
Great point.
This is why people don't like to travel. And I noticed that you said you drove, Sam. And how long is the drive to Nashville?
8.
That's doable. Maybe an 8-hour drive with just you and your partner is preferable to dealing with something like that on an airplane.
You can call her his girlfriend.
What? Yeah, I know. What is the amount of time?
Remember the last time you said partner on the air?
I know.
Remember what happened?
We need a new name for the mature woman.
She also said partner while you were gone in reference to herself, and there were a lot of questions on the text.
About whether she... You use the word partner when you're talking about a gay couple.
No, but why can't it just be your person? I'm just going to start saying my person.
Okay. Well, you remember what happened when you talked about Jack and his girlfriend?
I know.
And your dad thought Jack was gay?
When did partner become exclusive to the gay community?
About the time they came up with the word partner?
Yeah.
Am I right or am I right?
Yeah, you're right. I have something I'm going to do for you, Scott, and you don't even know it yet.
All right.
But because you all have been making fun of me mercilessly on this program for weeks, pointing out...
The house or being a mature woman?
Pointing out the sweater that I purchased on Facebook for the, quote, mature woman.
Did you have to mention the house? Really?
When I pull up my Facebook now, including this morning, all I get are advertisements for clothing for, quote, the mature woman, which, by the way, even at my age, I never saw that term specifically until you ding-a-ling started mentioning it on this program.
No, well, no,
then my phone is listening.
This is not our fault.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not, because you bought two sweaters for a mature woman off of Facebook.
That is a fact. Simply clicking on the link to go look at the posting for the sale, put that in your algorithm.
So here's the problem.
When you hit pay now,
that is, that is now my entire algorithm. And today I went and took a screenshot of, hey, Dana, something you might like, this sweater for the mature woman. And I send it to you guys with an expletive that we cannot repeat on the air. Just taking the screenshot of that to send it to you and Sam and
trigger the algorithm again.
Dan, it triggered it again. It is up and down my feed.
You have no one to blame but yourself.
I disagree.
Okay.
I completely blame the three of you. And what I'm going to do, and you don't even know this, the next time you are away from your computer for any length of time, I am going to start shouting into your phone or desktop, adult diapers for men.
What?
Yes, I'm doing it. You have sabotaged my algorithm. Yes, you have.
No, you did it when you clicked on it. The mature woman's sweater category.
That's not what it said when I bought the sweater. Now it's what it said.
It most certainly said that because you referenced it
as a mature woman's sweater. Now,
all I'm saying is you are about to get a whole new fresh set of ads in your feed, and I cannot wait. I've made a list. I'm not going to share all of it with you. We're going to get very creative. We might take suggestions on the text line. I don't know if we'll have time.
Fine. Make sure you take your phone to the bathroom every time you go. Urinary tract infection medication.
Okay. All right. Widow's peak, losing hair, male, 53.
That's below the belt.
Bring it.
Those are some golden arches you got.
Bedroom aids for the mature man.
Quiet, Dan. 913-586-7798, 586-7798, here on Dan and Parks. We would be remiss if we don't recognize the passing of one of Kansas City's giants, Donald Hall of the famous Hall family here in town, died over the weekend at the age of 96. He was the son of Hallmark founder J.C. Hall. According to a release from the company, Don Hall grew up in and around the family business before officially joining Hallmark as an assistant salesman. At the age of 17, he went to Dartmouth, joined the U.S. Army, served much of his time in the Army in Japan as an officer, returned to Hallmark in 1953, was promoted to administrative vice president in 1958, and became CEO of Hallmark in 1966. Don Hall passed away over the weekend at the age of 96.
I love this quote from him, and KCR talked about this today. I have never seen a greeting card sent in anger, he was fond of saying. It's marvelous to be in a business where your sole efforts are directed at improving somebody's feeling. That is a joy. And I would also just like to note he was a giant in philanthropic and civic circles. His fingerprints all over this town.
Crown Center was his idea.
Wow.
A city within a city. From the New York Post, disgraced Grey's Anatomy writer Elizabeth Finch would allegedly alter her appearance and take puke breaks as part of an orchestrated ruse to get people to believe that she was seriously ill with cancer. A clip of the new three-part series Anatomy of Lies on Peacock displayed a glimpse into the extent of Finch's lies as she faked having cancer for nearly a decade.
Oh, come on.
While working on the Emmy-winning show. In it, her former colleague, writer and producer Andy Reiser, shared the feeling of betrayal that he felt over the lengths the fraudster was willing to go to convince others that she was grappling with cancer and chemotherapy.
She did this to get the job. Did you see that?
I did not see that part. Reiser says in one clip, the thing is, quote, it was so confusing. You have to move through 8 years of interactions to even wrap your head around it. And I'm not even sure that I still fully have. Reiser compared Finch's lies to performance art.
So apparently there's a documentary coming out that I will be watching called Anatomy of Lies.
That's this.
Right. Yeah. And then screenshots are dispersed throughout of different things she said on social. And there are certain sound bites where she says things like, I pride myself on not being a liar.
Excuse me?
This is Time Magazine, was always drawn to writing about trauma, okay? Landed a job in the writer's room in 2014 after writing a viral L Story magazine article about being diagnosed with a rare bone cancer in 2012. She became a go-to authority on writing any cancer-related plot lines. And colleagues would watch her nibble on saltines and take breaks throughout the day as she pretended to be physically sick from what they thought were cancer treatments.
Did she not ever think to herself, you know, cancer does go into remission, I can stop this ruse and just go back to living my normal life? Or was she just so far into this case of the look at me's that...
Well, but after 10 years, I mean, who battles cancer, actively battles cancer?
Consistently for 10 years.
For a decade.
Yeah.
I mean, I have several friends who have had cancer, sadly lost my best friend to cancer. But, I mean, when Joe got cancer 9, 10 years ago, he went through chemotherapy and all that stuff, and then he was in remission until, sadly, it came back 2 years ago.
Wait a minute. We might have to bring this back because there is a Kansas connection to this. Hold, please. Due to the stress of writing an episode for Grey's Anatomy about trauma, Finch took a leave from work and checked into a mental health treatment facility in Arizona. There, she met Jen Beyer, a nurse and mother from Kansas, recovering from an abusive marriage. They became fast friends. Over time, their friendship grew romantic and they married in February of 2020. Then the lockdown happened. It strained their relationship. Beyer's daughter revealed she did not go to school for a year, even when her school reopened, because, quote, Finch was afraid the daughter would bring home COVID and kill her. It was Beyer, her then wife, from the state of Kansas, who uncovered Finch's lies.
She would shave her head daily and somehow give her head a greenish hue.
Remember, her partner that she met in that treatment facility was a healthcare professional. During lockdown, her wife discovered a photo of this woman with a bandage on her chest where, quote, a chemotherapy port was supposed to be. But her wife never saw a scar in that area, and that's when she started putting two and two together.
I'll be darned.
Wow.
Well, they allude in this story from the New York Post that she had sort of a port that you could almost see under her shirt. And one of the guys with Grey's Anatomy said, for all I know, that was a Lego taped to her chest.
Yep. When it came clear that Finch had been lying,
she was exposed in 2022
and was not going to come clean. Beyer wrote an email to Grey's Anatomy creator Shonda Rhimes.
Wow. She later resigned from the show, fessed up to her lies, admitting that she, quote, never had any form of cancer. While speaking with the Ankler, that's apparently some sort of publication, months after the expose in Vanity Fair laid out her ruse.
She's also taking a woe is me approach because people reacted negatively to her lying for a decade.
No, she said, I received horrible texts.
Yeah, from people who actually have cancer or have survived cancer.
She said people were that she knew, quote, were immediately very, very nasty on text.
We might talk about this when we come back. Is this criminal? And I could make the argument it is. She used a fake story, completely fake, for financial gain, which is the job. She got that job based on the fake article about her cancer. Said, I am the one that can write this better than anyone because I have cancer.
Well, but how many people lie to get jobs. Mm. And the punishment normally is you just get fired, right? If I tell you that I have a doctorate from MIT and you don't check into it, but years later you find out that I was lying, you don't, I'm not charged with fraud. I just get fired. Right? Now, if it's stolen valor, that is a crime. Stolen valor is a crime.
Somebody on the text line says that lying about having cancer is one step below stolen valor on the totem pole of ridiculousness.
913-586-7798, 586-7798, here on Dana and Parks. Somebody on the text line writes, I'm not going to give the last four. My ex-wife did the exact same thing, had people convinced that she had cancer for more than 2 years. Never was ever diagnosed with any kind of cancer.
So it turns out Elizabeth Finch's wife, who is a nurse and, you know, has been uncovered as a fraud. Turns out her wife, who was the one who figured out that things are not adding up, I'm starting to wonder if she actually has cancer. Her wife is from Kansas City. And then Finch herself is from here as well.
Is she really?
Has degrees in composition and theory from the University of Missouri, Kansas City.
Definitely good at theory.
And the University of Wyoming.
In conspiracy?
Her own, yeah.
Yeah.
It is Munchausen syndrome, also known as factitious disorder. People with Munchausen syndrome lie about symptoms, make themselves sick, or tamper with medical tests. They may also claim multiple medical problems or have an inconsistent medical history.
Also, a lot of people on the text line are taking issue with my comment about she could have stopped pretending she had cancer after a few years because it went into remission. I know that people have cancer for long time, but she could have given up the ruse at some point and said, oh yeah, you know, it went away, now I'm better. But she decided to keep it going.
You know why? Because she liked the attention. And mm-hmm. I would also argue she liked the money that came from the job that she was hired for based on the lie that she had cancer.
And therein lies the biggest problem. When you tell lies, especially if you are a compulsive liar or a pathological liar, you have to remember the lies that you told so that you can keep the ruse. And then you have to add on to those lies. And she even says later on in the interview that she did with Vanity Fair when they exposed her, that the lies, quote, got bigger and bigger and bigger and got buried deeper and deeper inside of me. I know it's absolutely wrong what I did. I lied, and there's no excuse for it.
But the other thing that bothers, which should bother everybody about this, is that with something as sensitive as a medical diagnosis like cancer, no one is going to question that. Mm-hmm. You know, when you talk about stolen valor, there are service men and women who have called into this program to say, if someone's bragging at a bar, I will say, oh, you served? Tell me more. What company were you in? If they start going to places that don't seem quite accurate with their, you know, I caught a big fish tail.
Well, and the reason, part of the reason is, forgive me for interrupting you, is most people who are in the service who have achieved, you know, silver star.
They don't brag about it.
That's right. They don't brag about it.
But with cancer, it's different. You're not going to be sitting in a bar bragging about your cancer diagnosis, and then someone next to you is going to go, tell me more about that, really? Mm-hmm. I mean, were you at Mayo? When were you at Mayo? No, there's just no real opening to call somebody on something like that. How would you even begin?
Well, and this all started because she was a writer trying to get seen, and it worked. And then she realized, oh, no, what do I do now? Because people want to hire me. This was the whole goal, but I have no real knowledge in this field.
True, but back to your original point, though, Sam, at some point, you got the job. You faked that you had cancer because you're sick in the head.
Right.
But you got the gig.
2 years later, say, oh, my gosh, it's a miracle.
I'm in remission.
Yeah.
The chemotherapy worked and start slowly growing your hair back. and then just, I mean, you've already got the job. Now just get on with your professional career. And she would have never been caught. But to Dana's point, and it's a good one, she must have been intoxicated with the attention that she was getting. I mean, and I speak allegedly because I don't know. I don't know this woman. But to keep this charade going for a decade where you're shaving your head every single morning, faking that you have a port in your chest.
And not to mention, I'm not trying to sympathize with her, but she was probably constantly looking over her shoulder, wondering, when are they going to find out?
And they probably never would have found out if after 2 or 3 years, she pretended that she was cured.
I'm fascinated because now we know both women are from Kansas City. And did this just start? Did she just one day hatch a plot? There has to be a first time that you tell someone you have cancer when you do not. Did this just start? Or if you went back way back into her, you know, middle school, high school, years at UMKC, whatever, is this someone who is more like, I'm saying, pathological liar?
So retell her, now Elizabeth Finch, her now ex-wife, is from Kansas City, Missouri. What is Elizabeth Finch's claim to Kansas City?
Did she
She was here from here as
from
well?
From okay. here huh. and has degrees in composing and theory from UMKC. I can do a little bit more digging and try to figure out where she went to high school, but I would be curious, like, for those who knew her way back when, did this just start when she tried to go off to Hollywood and become a writer? Because I guess my point is, I don't think you just wake up one day and you're like, gosh, what am I going to do today? I am going to hatch a lie that I am battling cancer and I'm not. You do not have an elevator that is going all the way up to the top floor.
Clearly.
And so when did that start?
Well, I mean, let's go back in time, and this name has popped up on the text line a couple of times. When did Rachel Dolezal wake up and decide, you know what? I'm a black woman.
I'm going to identify as a black woman.
I'm going to change my appearance.
Yep.
And I'm going to be black. When all the while, I'm assuming that her parents were still alive, are still alive, would have said, honey, are you all right? I mean, you've literally changed your appearance to make yourself look black. What's going on?
She also had financial gain.
She had a position with the NAACP.
Yes, where you can put a number to what she earned based on that lie. I would argue the cases are almost identical.
But you were asking before the bottom of the hour break, is she criminally liable for this lie? And I'm trying, other than maybe fraud.
Oh, it would be fraud. Sure, it would be fraud.
But
certainly, if the fact that she had cancer was a stepping stone to her getting the writing job at Grey's Anatomy,
it's fraud.
That's 100%
fraud. Rachel Dolezal engaged in fraud to get a job with the NAACP. She claimed she was black. She was not.
And I think the NAACP would have standard to sue her.
But would you have standing to criminally charge her?
Mm.
I mean, because people lie on their resumes all the time. I have a degree in this and that. No, you don't.
The Anatomy of Lies, by the way, is a new 3-part series from Peacock. I just got rid of Peacock. I might have to bring that back just for this one. And says it's a laundry list of lies reportedly told by the once famed TV writer Elizabeth Finch. So according to this, and this is from the Oxygen Network, it is not all just the cancer lie.
Oh, it never is.
Telephone number here is 913-586-7798, 586-7798, here on Dana and Parks. Story here from the New York Post. America's office market is teetering on the edge of a massive shakeup as rising debt and the permanent shift to remote work leave countless office buildings across the country vacant and struggling. In response, experts predict a wave of fire sales and conversions that will turn these once bustling office towers into much-needed residential housing. with vacancy rates as high as 80% in some Class B office buildings, the older, less attractive properties in need of renovations, the clock is ticking for landlords and banks. Already, large financial institutions are shedding these troubled assets from their balance sheets, with the total amount of commercial real estate loans held by banks dropping to $2.9 trillion from a peak of $3 trillion earlier this year.
Good.
Good. How about we get people to go back to the office?
Well, I would agree with that. But if the buildings are just sitting there vacant, turn them into housing and lower the housing costs in some of these cities that it's blown out of proportion.
Like, what are they going to do? What's the name on that Yeti you have there, Dana? Is it Kiewit?
Kiewit.
Kiewit. What are they going to do with the old Kiewit building on 435 and 95th Street? It's been vacant for years.
I don't know. Yeah. They're over in Lenexa now.
Well,
it's lovely. Like my brand new Kiewit.
Brand new, been sitting on the editor's desk that I stole. For 6 months.
Do you really steal something if it's just been sitting somewhere unclaimed for 1 year?
Here's what I wouldn't do. Drink out of it.
I washed it out.
With water?
You rinsed it out.
I did rinse it out.
But whose lips were on that before yours?
I don't know. That's someone from Kiewit?
seriously, the Kiewit building over on 435 has been vacant. Just sits there. It's like a shell.
I can't imagine it would cost a whole lot to retrofit those into apartments. And
well, Sam, we've been waiting for 14 years for them to figure out something to do with the Gateway project.
Well, that's true.
Always bringing up Gateway. Did you guys see? If you did not, I will repost it. The funniest tweet. I honestly, when it comes to Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, this might be the funniest tweet I have ever seen in the history of the Chiefs on Twitter. So did you watch Aaron Rodgers last night?
Well, I saw his Hail Mary.
Incredible, incredible Hail Mary. And I think it was, like his fifth or sixth career Hail Mary. It was incredible. So Patrick Mahomes posts last night, why is Aaron so good at that? With three smiling, crying, laughing emojis. Mm-hmm. LeBron James replies, right? It's ridiculous. With five laughing, crying face emojis. Then enters a random dude named Jalen, who replies, crazy, right? Hey, we should all hang together sometime.
Okay, we're on it.
Let's do it. I'm down. Let's go.
Look, I don't know if Jalen is from Kansas City. I hope he is. That thing went viral this morning. It is so funny. And I so hope either Mahomes or LeBron at least replied.
Hey,
I don't think they're going to hang with him. But the guy shot his shot.
You miss 100% of the shots that you don't take.
He thank
shot
you, Wayne Gretzky.
His right. shot. And speaking of, did shoot you see shoot. Over the weekend, this was in the stack and we forgot it, that a student, you know, they do this, like, I'll give you $100,000 if you can kick a field goal or if you can make a half court shot, whatever.
Right.
A student over the weekend at one of the college games shot his shot. Made it, and wasn't it Pat McAfee who had to pay that? Well, probably wasn't Pat McAfee who actually had
no,
to pay
that. No, he doesn't actually pay that stuff, but you're right.
But won $100,000. I think it was a kid from Oregon. I love those stories.
College game day, they do it every Saturday, and he hit it. I believe he had Vans on.
Well, he also got, I watched that.
It's so fun.
He got a second shot.
He did.
He did not make it on the first kick. And then
they also donated like $300,000
to hurricane relief. Yes.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah.
But if you think that Pat McAfee actually pays that $100,000.
I don't care. I'm just happy for the kid.
ESPN, I guarantee you, is the one who pays that.
So here's what happened.
Boy, yeah.
His name is Daniel. He was supposed to convert a roughly 40-yard field goal try for $75,000. He missed that one, like Sam said. But his try was impressive enough that Pat McAfee and Kirk, is it Herbstreet, gave him another shot.
Yeah.
This time it was $100,000 plus another $100,000 added to ESPN's pledge for the hurricane relief. And it was the second kick that he drilled down the middle with some room to spare.
See, Travis Kelce and Taylor were at the New York Yankees Guardians game
the other
night.
Yeah. Holding hands and looking all darling. It makes me so happy.
Get ready, though. People are going to say he needs to be in Kansas City.
Oh, stop it. Sam, am I wrong? It was a bye week.
This weekend's not a bye week.
Now, I will say that being out of town over the weekend, this past weekend, was fully acceptable considering it was a bye week.
Agreed.
However, come Sunday, if he's dropping footballs. Mm-hmm.
People are going to say, should have been in practice.
Yeah. They'll say it.
I know.
By the way, according to ESPN, that money comes directly from Pat McAfee's pocket.
Really?
Wow.
That is according to ESPN, which I don't know why they would lie and give him the credit.
Well, then, A, I stand corrected, and B, he's not as big of a jerk as I think he is. Because I am not a Pat McAfee fan.
I don't think he's a jerk. I think he could stand to cover up his guns.
He's
we get
lie.
It. We get it. You work out. I don't need to, why does he always wear a sleeveless shirt?
He's a punter.
I don't care.
He also is known to rip his shirt off during his college game day stunts and stand on top of his chair while waving
his
arms.
It's his signature. Fine.
A little Pat McAfee goes a long way.
He is a lot. He's like Broadway in Nashville. A lot.
It's a lot to handle.
Lot.
All right, don't forget to sign up for the Dana and Parks Cornhole Tournament. It is this Saturday at Serve in Overland Park. All the proceeds, every penny, goes to KC Pet Project. We have a limited number of slots for teams. If you'd like to play, we'd love to have you. You can register by going to KMBZ.com. News with Dan Weinbaum coming your way in 2 minutes.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.